Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Danny LaRue, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. This is the Southwest Division Capsule, so what that means is, for those of you who've listened before, is it is an off-season in review and a regular season preview. The guests for the Southwest are Seth Partnow of Nylon Calculus and Jonathan Sharks of Real GM. We talk about what teams did well in the offseason, what teams didn't do well, and talk about the upcoming season. And if you know those guys at all, you know we go on a couple of fun, worthwhile tangents. So I think you'll enjoy it. Conversation runs about 1 hour 10. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
I'm excited to do this one because the Southwest is just, it's a division that a lot has happened with. And I guess to start with Seth, the first question that I've been doing these with, and it's fun with this division, is who do you think got better and who do you think got worse?
I kind of think this division is easier in that everyone got better except for Dallas. And most of the teams that got better was mostly projected being better because they'll be, at least to start the season, somewhat healthy. And, you know, San Antonio got better. We'll talk about that plenty, I'm sure. But, New Orleans, Houston, OKC, so much of it's you know, there's kind of a common joke in European soccer when a guy who's been out for a while, he comes back. It's like a whole new signing. And, you know, with Dwight Howard being back to full strength, New Orleans, supposedly, you know, Holiday and whoever else being at full strength.
Yeah.
But Memphis got better.
Let's talk about that, I guess.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, Memphis is talent-wise, they definitely got better because Brandon Wright's a nice addition to that team. I think that he helps a lot of what ails them, especially considering they lost Kosta Koufos. But they're big flaw to me was still perimeter shooting and, you know, creation other than Mike Conley, and that is still a weakness for them.
Yeah, what I wonder with Memphis also is, like, you're watching Z-Bo and Tony Allen's kind of career range. They're getting worse every year. So I wonder, really, if they've gotten better or if they just stayed even, because those guys kind of declined back as they later moved in their 30s. And also with Wright, like, I watched Wright a ton in Dallas. He was amazing here, but he's got to be in that system where he's four out, he's rolling to the rim, he's catching oops. When he has to play like in a two-post kind of less spaced out system, he's still a decent player, but I'm not sure really he's that much of a difference maker in a system like that. But I think in Phoenix last year, he played a lot of four-man with Alex Len. I don't think it worked very well at all.
You know, but with Memphis, you got to figure that he's going to be spending a lot of time on the floor with Marc Gasol and, you know, bring Gasol to the high post, to the elbow. And it's maybe going to work a little bit differently than, you know, a straight spread pick and roll, but that's still going to be kind of keeping the you know, raising everyone else up the floor and keeping the baseline clear for him. And Gasol's obviously a wonderful passer. So that may take some adjustment, but I think it is going to present a lot of the same opportunities for him in terms of space around the basket to cut into and finish.
I mean, for sure, but he's still not Dirk. Like, when Wright was at his best with Dirk, Dirk's the three-point line, an extra 5 feet of space, and Wright was just destroyer of worlds. What was, like, 75% shooting or something crazy like that? Like, he'll still be good for them, but I'm not sure he's better than Kosta Koufos, to be honest. I thought Koufos did better with their system. He's bigger, much better defender, obviously.
This goes back maybe a little bit more to 2 years ago in the first round of the playoffs. They did a thing where they kind of went four out with they went very kind of Princeton style with running everything through Gasol kind of at the high post, and Wright maybe allows them to do some more of that without maybe sacrificing as much defensively. And so while he doesn't necessarily fit in with their quote unquote system, he maybe gives them flexibility to play in a slightly different way, which I think, allowing for the fact that there's still a deficit of shooting, barring some unforeseen developments from you know, Jordan Adams or something like that, it still gives them another kind of wrinkle to go to instead of, well, our team's on the floor kind of thing.
And also, yeah, they got Matt Barnes, which I think is, he's not going to be the end-all be-all, but I think that he makes them deeper in a way that is very useful for them, and he builds kind of off of what they already do, but they also got him for nothing, which is great.
But I feel like with Barnes, it's kind of like with Allen. I'm waiting for him to really fall off now. I feel like any day, he's just going to start falling off the cliff at his age, with
That's
his
true.
Game.
But he's cheap. And, yeah, what Memphis is going to, in order to, if their goal is to be relevant, I think they've succeeded. If their goal is to win a title, that's going to be hard. But
In the West right now, I think that being where they are is pretty admirable, especially considering they're a smaller market. And, you know, retaining Gasol, considering he could have gone wherever, granted the options weren't that great, especially if San Antonio wasn't calling because they were busy on the phone with LaMarcus Aldridge. But they, I think that what they have done is nice. Like, I think to a point, if you're, you know, in those kind of markets, that's a level of success that I think other teams should aspire to. Like, if Utah could end up, you know, spend the second half of this decade like Memphis spent the first half of it, I think they'd be pretty thrilled.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're a really good team. They got a good identity. I guess the question is, how many years does Zebo have left, and what's the plan going forward with him and moving off him, I guess, maybe 1-2 years down the line?
And I think that some of that is right allows for to take up some of that slack. Obviously, not in the same way, but in a way that's do similar things in a more almost modern way. And you know, you raise a good point that them being so counter-cyclical almost in the way they play is in some ways an advantage for them. And so if they're maybe moving back towards the norm, then they're just a worst version of the norm as opposed to a good version of something different, which gives them certain advantages.
That is interesting when you put it like that. I guess what I think with them is that I feel like it was really last year when San Antonio wasn't there, Oklahoma City wasn't there. I felt like when they were up 2-1 in Golden State, that was really the chance for them to go all in. That was their one kind of like, the cards bounced right that series. Maybe that was the year. If it wasn't going to be that year, I wonder what was going to happen for him.
Well, they could have beaten Houston. I wouldn't have necessarily expected it, but they certainly could have, especially if Conley could have gotten closer to 100%, because he had a couple of great games against the Warriors, and he was such an emotional lift as well. That wouldn't have been a fun series to watch, but it would have been very, at least, compelling television for people like us.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That was really the year for them. Whether besides Golden State, that was the year where it was really open for them to go all in on that push for a championship.
I don't disagree with your general point that they're, you know, in this division and in the West, kind of the second cut of teams that need a lot to go right to probably even make the conference finals, let alone the NBA finals.
One team that I think got better in a pretty notable way is Houston, because they had, you know, they have some superlative individual talents, but I always saw their biggest weakness as the lack of having a second creator. So whether Harden was being focused on or whatever, because Patrick Beverley is a wonderful player, but that's just not his strength. And Lawson, while it might not work, certainly, he has the ability to bring something that they just didn't have before.
Yeah, I've actually kind of looked at this in a fair number of different ways just from the number standpoint. And, you know, no player in the league used more possession shooting or playmaking than Harden did last year. And that's kind of in his, you know, head-to-head matchup with Steph Curry for MVP. That was maybe the biggest thing in his favor. He simply had to do so much more, and probably too much. And their offense probably or definitely relied too much on him doing things, and they kind of tended to get bogged down and watch James do something and stuff like that. And now adding a guy who's a secondary, you know, creator, playmaker, that they didn't have last year because they'd let the one they had last year or 2 years ago, sorry, sign with Dallas. Now that they have that, it may not, you know, be a perfect kind of side-by-side fit, but certainly allows them to at least have one playmaker on the floor at all times and multiple as needed.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more excited for Houston, really. I feel like with Lawson, he's, what, 27 right now? I think, really, this is the year for him. Like, he's 5'11", 6 feet tall. So as he gets deeper into his 20s, he'll start losing his speed. But he's still at his peak right now. He's on the perfect team for his kind of game. And those two guys are going to push the tempo all season long. It should be really, really fun to watch them this year.
Yeah, so he's 27 now. He'll turn 28 early in the season. And the other part that makes it so amazing, and this isn't really from a talent perspective, but for Houston is that they got him to make his second season non-guaranteed, because what that did is it took away the risk for Houston. So if it doesn't work out, all they gave up in the trade was, you know, a couple of young pieces like Nick Johnson and a future first-round pick, which isn't going to be that good. And if it works, you get him at a cheap price for next year, because I mean, people are going to see the prices that guys are going to go for next year, and they're going to go crazy. But and if it doesn't work, then you get out of it scot free, and it's okay, and they're going to probably have some cap space to work with. But I think their pieces fit together better now than they did before, even though they still have, I still think that they need that just reliable shooter on the wing. They have a lot of defensive talent now there too.
We've talked about their guards. I kind of want to talk about their front court, because their front court is just has so many interesting players.
Yeah, it has a lot of interesting players, and it doesn't. I don't see a single like killer combination among them, but there are a lot of combinations I like.
Yeah, I think,
for sure. I guess what I'm curious for you guys is, I think going forward, would y'all take Jones or Monte Ellis on this team? Because they probably can't keep both after this season.
I think that a lot of that depends on what happens with Howard. I don't think you can quite count on Clint Capella yet. Even though I know Danny is kind of driving that bus, and I'm not driving him
as a starter bus. I'm driving him eventually being good bus.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's good already, but you know,
he was good in the playoffs.
Sure. Yeah, he's good enough to contribute already. But yeah, I mean, I think the more they're moving away from Howard and not necessarily bringing in a replacement, that leans more towards Monte Ellis, I would think. Even though I think I like Terrence Jones in a vacuum a little more. He's also a guy who is more easily, I don't want to say replaceable, but more fungible than Monte Ellis, who's a, I don't want to say unique player, but a less common player.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. Terrence Jones is a good player, but he's a good player in a way that is very common. You know, he rebounds well, he plays hard. Monte Ellis can shoot. I think, to me, I trust his jump shot more than I trust Terrence Jones. I don't know if the numbers
for sure
bear that out. And I like his defense. I don't know what it is. And also, he has his post game, especially if he's defended by fours, I think his post game works pretty well. Like, he's a little bit weird. He's a little bit different. And so, like, I think guys have trouble figuring him out. That was something I noticed seeing more of him in person when the Warriors played them. It's just, he wasn't amazing. Not this series, but during the season. I think there was a moment when Draymond was on him, and I think Draymond had trouble figuring him out. And that's always a good sign when a talented defender has some trouble with you. And Demo can play some center, which I don't think Terrence Jones can do.
The counterpoint to that is that Terrence Jones is unusual in that he's at least kind of over the 2 years we've had the numbers, by the numbers, he's been one of the better fours in terms of rim protection. I mean,
that's true.
He's not in the league of Serge Ibaka, who's kind of I think Amin El-Hassan likes to call him a basketball unicorn in terms of like the rim protecting stretch four.
I call him the cheat code.
Yeah, and he Terrence Jones isn't quite there, but you know he's better than the vast majority of fours in terms of that skill set. So that's a tough decision, and it's going to come down more to what else happens with the roster than a straight pick between those two guys in a vacuum, I think.
Well, I think also if Jones took the next step as a player, it has to be with the ball in his hands, with using his ball handling ability, which probably won't happen in Houston very much, whereas Monte Ellis can just spot up and be very valuable. Well, I think Jones, if you want to see him kind of pay into his next contract, has to get more touches, has to get more shots, more drives, which probably won't happen. Like, I'm thinking with the Mavs, whoever one of those two guys the Rockets doesn't sign, the Mavs probably signs the next power forward, to be honest. That's my long-term plan for Dallas.
Well, yeah, it's probably better than Dallas's long-term plan was this summer.
Mavs don't have long-term plans. They have one-month plans.
I feel like I'm treading on ground here, because even though it hasn't been released yet, we did the Western Conference offseason grades. I did them with Nate today, and we talked a lot about the Mavericks. And I understand what happened with them, but the way that their roster is constructed for this year is such a crazy challenge for Rick Carlisle, because they have four point guards who probably shouldn't play much too. Maybe you dabble with Darren a little bit. And basically all the natural swingmen they have are either rookies or were just hurt. And so I trust Rick Carlisle. He's a magnificent coach. I think he's one of the five best coaches in the league. But this is such a weird combination of players.
Well, one thing is they really only have three point guards because Rick's not going to play Ray Felton unless someone's injured, basically. He proved that last year pretty much. And he loves to play two point guards. And my guess is he'll play Devin mostly at two most this season. and I'll just play Williams and Barea at the ones. Or I'll play Williams at the two, Barea at the one. I think we'll see that a lot. And here's what I think the Mavs, this is my thing, is the Mavs' only real play right now, is if they can go four out with Williams, Matthews, Parsons, Dirk, and have Javal as the rim runner, as the Brandon Wright guy. Max space, max shooting. I think that's where they're only really play this season. Take advantage of losing Rondo and Monte, spreading the floor and just chucking threes like it's no one's business. I think that's the one chance they have to be a decent team this season.
I'm just trying to imagine Carlisle's facial expressions with McGee is...
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch for sure.
Dallas would become a top-notch league pass team if they ran that lineup regularly, mostly because I would want to see if Rick Carlisle would actually murder a player on the sideline during a game.
I mean, you have to remember, he got Sam Dallenberg a decent season out of him. Like, and with Javal, like, this is it for Javal. He's out of the league last season. He knows, like, he's got a bit... Obviously, that's a, you know, we can't, like, count on Javal McGee, but he is 26-27 now. He was out of the league. He's been humbled. He's coming in wanting to prove something. They'll put him in a very limited role. They'll minimize his amount of touches with the ball. It'll be Javal run to the rim, catch oops. No dribbling, no passing, no thinking. Just basic instinctual basketball. That has to be the play, I think. And just hope for the best.
I never would have expected this, but JaVale and Ty Lawson were born in the same year, 1988. Like, it feels like JaVale is so much younger, which is, I guess it's because Lawson's been prominent for a long time. But yeah, JaVale's about 11 months older. That's crazy.
Huh. Well, yeah, you think the way he plays, I guess, you just kind of assume he's really...
Yeah. That's true. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit more in the next... We'll have plenty of time to talk about Spurs, but like, what they did is really incredible. And, you know, that they got a talent in LaMarcus, and, you know, they kind of changed their identity to a point, and I know Mr. Partnow has some thoughts on how their defense is going to adjust, but I feel like it's... Their opportunity to win the title this year is really compelling.
Yes, but I think that, you know, this has been hashed out by this point a fair amount, of, you know, many different places, but there's a lot of things that kind of that have to go their way for that to be true.
Yeah.
And they're not all givens. I mean, you know, you given, you know, culture, Popovich, Spursiness, all that stuff, you have to, you know, you can't, you know, discount or rule out all the things happening right. But, you know, I don't think the Spurs are immune from, you know, age, whether it's Duncan, Ginobili, Parker. You know, Duncan is still putting up the same season every year for the last 18 years. But Manu and Tony Parker aren't. And so that's kind of important. Manu probably less so at this point. Especially with Leonard kind of emerging as more of a ball in his hands kind of guy. But, you know, if they have to go away from Tony Parker, do you trust Patty Mills?
Yeah, that's my question, too. I kind of forgot this, but he averaged 11 points on 36% shooting in the playoffs. Like, what happened? Was he injured or something? Like, in that series against the Clippers.
Are you talking about Tony Parker or Patty Mills?
Yeah, Tony Parker. Like, he really fell off the map in the playoffs. I don't really remember what happened exactly.
Did he tweak his hamstring again?
I think I seem to remember that he had an injury, but I don't know well enough to say definitively.
Okay. Because, yeah, I mean, they're going to need more than that, obviously, than 11 points a game.
Yeah.
That really kind of low-key killed them.
And they don't have a ton of creators if Manu isn't Manu anymore, which I think we all agree that he is not, is that, you know, the only other creators that they have in that kind of pure sense, like the guys that you want to initiate, they have other guys who can, you know, once the seam is created, they can do stuff. But the other initiators are Patty Mills and Ray McCallum, who is a long way away, and Kyle Anderson, who is a very different player. I've talked about this, I think it was with Ben Golliver, that my pet theory with the Spurs, the lineup that I want to see them roll out there is, no, I'm not saying to start it or anything, but I just want to see it intellectually, is Green, Kawhi, Kyle Anderson, Duncan, and LaMarcus. Just because if that lineup
works. I like it.
Because Kyle Anderson, like, Danny Green to me is best guarding ones. I like him as an on-ball defender. I like him that you just hide Kyle on whoever the worst of the other guys is, and it might fail spectacularly, but it'd be spectacular either way.
Really, I want to see one more wing in that lineup, though. I want to see, like, Green, Kawhi, more speed than, like, Kyle and LaMarcus or Kyle and Duncan or something.
Do they have another wing?
I don't really think they do. And that's
I guess, like, John Simmons?
You know, he's an interesting, you know, bit of athletic dynamism that they kind of picked up out of nowhere. Who knows if he's going to play at all this year. But
he
looked
good in summer league.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I mean, oh, of course that's the guy the Spurs signed I think there's one time where he kind of came down the lane and dunked all over everybody and it's like, okay, that's the guy the Spurs signed. Of course, through a guaranteed contract yesterday. Because of course it is.
Yeah. And he was one of the guys, there were players that were on guaranteed contracts that didn't pop. And he was a guy that when you saw, like, for me, this was the first time I ever attended it in person that, you see one or two players every game and be like, oh, that's an NBA player. That's what it actually looks like. And sometimes that would be guys like T.J. Warren who shouldn't have been there, who were just there for their second year. But John Simmons was one of those players.
Yeah, I didn't watch the summer league. He really came out of nowhere. I've never even heard of this guy before. But he's 6'6". He's really athletic. He can shoot threes.
Yeah, and he's energetic, which is important. Like, you see, one of the things that's always frustrated me about, let's say, somebody like Gerald Green, I'm not saying he's that caliber of athlete, maybe Gerald Green now, but a lot of times those guys, you know, they use it in bursts, but what I liked about Simmons was that even when he was playing heavier minutes in summer, which wasn't most of it, he was still playing hard, and he was, you know, trying to use his advantages and trying to get rebounds and trying to dunk on people and get threes, and that's good. If he can do that for 5 minutes, 10 minutes a game for the Spurs, that'd be fantastic for them.
I like that. Like, my pet theory is, like, I feel like every team should have two on their bench, 2 6-6 wings who maybe could play. Because it becomes such a valuable part of the NBA.
Like James Ennis?
Like, you can't have too many wings. Yeah, just have these guys just in case, because it's always useful to have guys like that.
I've kind of thought that ever since the first year of the Heatles was when they were filling their bench with, like, Juwan Howard and Jerry Stackhouse, that it's like, why aren't they going and finding, like, 6'6 wings who can run, jump, and maybe shoot, and hope one of them works out. It seemed like that would have been so much the better way for kind of those particular teams to roll. But and so I agree with you that those are those are the guys that you'd like to see teams take flyers on, acknowledging the fact that there's also some value to having, you know, a calm veteran head, you know, in the 14th, 15th spot.
Or like the Wolves, you can just have three calm veteran heads. Just because, just for whatever reason, you just want to have three of them.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But it also frustrates me that the Heat finally got that guy in Gerald Green after LeBron already left. Because why not?
I wanted to actually, since you talked about, you know, kind of popping at Summer League, we kind of skipped over it with Dallas. Carlisle is not known for playing the young guys, but guy who, you know, looks like an NBA player out there. I think Justin Anderson was a guy who certainly looked the part. You know, it's summer league, and he's a physically very stout guy, so that, you know, obviously helps in the summer league setting. But still, aside from the fact that Carlisle is not fond of the rookies, could he end up being, like, their second best wing by the end of the year? Is that crazy to think that that's a possibility?
He's kind of going to have to be. Like, they really have nobody else who can play defense and shoot threes on that roster. So, like, they really need him. The Mavs don't have much of a choice in the matter.
Yeah, especially since they lost Richard Jefferson. Sorry, I'm still amazed, honestly, that he's a little bit in the league. But yeah, Anderson looked good in summer league, and in a way that I think can translate to production, because he plays defense. Like, a lot of times when you see rookies, like, you can talk about Carlisle or whoever, part of the reason that they don't get in rotation is because they're clueless out there defensively, and that drives coaches crazy. I think Anderson will be better than that at the beginning, and that will make Carlisle more comfortable playing him, plus the fact that there is no one else.
Yeah, especially with Matthews coming off the Achilles, Parks and the injury, like, he'll have to play big minutes right away. They're going to need him. And I will say, with Richard Jefferson, it is something else to watch that guy play for an entire season every night. He's just a guy from a distance. You watch him play like five times a year. Okay, he's still a decent player. Then you watch him make the things he makes, the decisions he makes on the floor on a nightly basis. It's really something to behold. I wish I had, looking back on it, I wish I had made a list of all, like, the top 15 or top 50 Jefferson plays this season, It'd have been something.
Is that a positive something or the other one?
I would say more the other one. Just like, he just, like, the thing, sometimes he does things that just make you, I couldn't believe 15 seasons or something, you do this stuff, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and it's, I always, for me, there's something that I've always enjoyed of when a guy who came into the league as, like, that athletic monster has to make that adjustment in their career, and whether or not they're great, whether they stick it. Like, the other guy who is in this division is Vince Carter. Like, I love it when a guy like Vince Carter can stick in the league once that part of their identity has gone away. Because it's just, I don't know, there's something fulfilling about that for me, even though I never had anything close to what they have now, much less what they had then.
Maybe it's time to force him out for Vince, though, based on last year.
Yeah. Yeah, it very well might be.
Yeah, which is too bad.
He got that 3-year deal. It's like, oh, man, yeah. That was a golden parachute right there.
Well, it's gonna ease the transition into being, you know, one of the best analysts, you know, color analysts in the league very, very well. Because, you know, if you've heard him on commentary, he's great. He's fabulous. I can't wait.
And he knows the game well, too. I like him a lot.
Give him and Brent Berry a studio show on NBA TV and you know it's DVR set.
Absolutely.
Season pass set.
Yeah, and give let them do some games on the sidelines too. I think they're good. Like, just like I like Weber doing both things as well. But we'll move on. We've talked kind of about that broad question. I mean, we've hit a lot of the other stuff, but. And you don't have to give an answer because we've already talked about so many things. We'll start with John. Are there any moves that happened this offseason that stuck out to you, like that you found them interesting, positive, negative, or just fascinating?
Well, I guess we've hit most of the big ones already. So I guess one we haven't talked about yet is Alvin Gentry to New Orleans.
Yes.
And really, I'm just curious to see how much small ball they play, how much Davis the Five is going to happen. That's what I really want to find out.
Yeah, especially considering they gave a lot of money to Ajinsa. You know, like, they have center and Omer, of course.
But and they bought in Perk, too.
Yeah, Perk. But I think that with Gentry, it's going to be a lot about just the philosophy of, like, hey, when we have the ball, we're going to move, as opposed to necessarily the personnel on the floor. I think he'll do that, too, of course. But I actually, based on what I've seen of Anthony Davis, while I like him offensively a lot better at the five, at this point in his career, during the regular season, I'm actually really happy with him as a four because it just reduces the pounding that he takes on a day-to-day basis because he has to carry so much of that team's load, scoring-wise, creation-wise. Just he is the alpha and the omega with that team, and some of that was because Drew was out so much of the year. But if they can have the system do some of that work, and then you have those big bruisers that are just taking some of the licks from the Marc Gasols of the world, I think that's good for Davis.
This is going to sound like an anti-Gentry hot take, but I need to, because this bugs me. The fact that, like, oh, they got Alvin Gentry, they're 15 wins better, which neither of you have said, but it's you know, that's the general sentiment out there is, like, all of a sudden they're going to score our, you know, 120 points for 100 possession because Alvin Gentry. It's like, is he suddenly making, like, Tyreek Evans a ball mover and has he healed, you know, the various maladies of Drew Holiday and Eric Gordon and made Ryan Anderson able to stay on the floor and Omer Asik be able to catch the ball? It's, you know, I think it's, you know, Monty took a lot of crap and probably a lot of it deserved and it's probably an upgraded coach. And I think that Gentry is also getting more credit for being a genius level coach. I mean, we talked about, you know, there's two legitimate genius level coaches already in this division in Pop and Carlisle. And, you know, for as little as we know about evaluating coaches, I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb by saying Gentry's not in that class, but he's getting a bump because he's by every account, an incredibly nice guy and, you know, is very good offensive mind. Having stipulated all that, that, you know, it's what are you making chicken salad out of here with New Orleans? This is still a roster that's got some serious question marks to them, and all the coaching in the world doesn't, you know, fix the things that I just talked about.
I think the thing is, like, people just want to see Davis with, like, four wings. Like, I'm looking at their roster. This team must have two or three 6'6" cut off their bench. But they only have, like, right now 12 on the roster, which is kind of weird. Especially how many injuries they have with Tyreek and Drew and Gordon.
They added Jeff Adrian for some reason. My theory with that is that people are conflating a more watchable team with a better team. And I think that, you know, they're going to be more fun to watch, But you're right that they're not going to be, you know, the talent is really the same, which I actually think was one of the bigger mistakes that any team made this year, was just that they brought the gang back together when Davis was what made them good. And also, Monty, like, so when you talk about that kind of an upgrade, to me that's more when you're going from a strong negative as a coach, like, I don't know, let's pick random Denver and Orlando. Like, what those kind of teams are doing and what the Lakers will do after this season, as opposed to somebody like Monty Williams, where while Monty Williams was frustrating, he pretty clearly to me was not a terrible coach in any way. So the adjustment is a lot more mellow because of that. You know, you're not going from a horrible coach to even a passable coach. You're going from somebody who did a decent job at maybe even better than decent, maybe good, to somebody who maybe will be very good.
I just want to see, like, let's just see them go Davis, Pondexter, Gordon, Holiday, Evans.
Oh,
like,
God,
let's see stuff like that as much as possible. That's why I think that with Jen, it's not so much Jen's been a coach for a long time now. He's up and down career. It's just like, will he run that small ball system there in Golden State? Will he run it to its max? Will we get Davis in space, Davis with wings, push the ball, let's see what happens. Even more than the coach, it's like, let's find some more wings. Let's get Davis in the Draymond Green role, just run the ball constantly. That's all.
I mean, that's what Danny said. That's a more fun game to watch, but that lineup's going to give up all the points. Every point they're going to give up. You know, they're not going to be able to, and that's kind of, that's this kind of misshapen roster that they have kind of puts them in a situation where they have the most explicit offense defense decisions to make lineup wise at all times.
Yeah,
what's that?
They have so few, like, they have so few guys who are really good defenders. Even I like Pondexter. You know, they've gotten some defensive centers, and Davis has a ton of potential on that end, which is partially unrealized at this point. And Drew is good, but they don't have, like, almost everybody else. You know, you have the Civs like Tyreek and Eric Gordon, and also when we're talking about the idea of, you know, Gentry and playing up tempo, you know, maybe helping some guys. Eric Gordon was really effective when he was on the court last year, and while Gentry could help him to a point, you're improving off of a much higher baseline, let's say, than with somebody who is, let's say, like a great disappointment or something.
I mean, he led the league in three-point shooting last year, did he not?
Well, I think technically Babbitt did, but that's all a bunch of hooey.
Attempts qualified, but yeah. No, but by the way, to get back to your previous point, and I think that's the comparison I'm actually implicitly drawing, is between, say, the situation in Orlando, where they've upgraded more, but since the guy they brought in is not as well-liked, it was kind of a move that people have sort of harumphed over, because, you know, Alvin Gentry is the nicest guy in the world, and Scott Skiles isn't. So much of our perception of coaches is guys who give good coach in the media, is kind of how I've put it in the past, and that's kind of show up on a studio show and say things. You're like, yeah, that guy, I'd play for that guy, when that's a bit of salesmanship rather than anything else. I mean, I could go on forever on this rant, and I, you know, so sorry about that.
Yeah, that's very Doc Rivers. That's what I thought of when you're saying that. Like, that's his whole shtick from day one. It's always been.
Well, and I would probably say that the moving from Monty to Gentry is, off the top of my head, it's maybe the third biggest coaching improvement in the league, and you could argue that it's fourth, because you could argue that Donovan over Brooks is a bigger upgrade than Gentry to Williams.
Okay.
Well, that's just like, it's hard to say right now with Donovan. Let's let that one be, I think.
It's a huge question mark. But we'll move on. Yeah. So the next question I have in there, and we'll start with Seth, is, it might be easy, but, you know, maybe have a contrarian. The best newcomer to his team in this division?
I mean, you got to figure it's certainly the best player coming into this division is Aldridge.
Yeah.
I think, to go super nuance on this, it's like whether his net impact on the team is the greatest is a somewhat open question, but still you have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, you're bringing a many-time all-star into a team for not quite free, because they basically had to let Tiago Splitter go, but that's still one player's an all-star, the other player was a good, functional, but often hurt role player. And so obviously that's an upgrade.
I mean, it's hard to argue with LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, he's LaMarcus Aldridge. He's a top 10, 15 player in a prime of his career, two-way player. You know, I mean, for all the stuff about the fit and the Spurs, like, he's a great player. So it's hard. I mean, he's clearly the best player in the conference. I think Ty Lawson is almost as big. I mean, he's not LaMarcus Aldridge, but he's a really good player, too. Those two guys are way ahead of everybody else coming into this division.
And a similarly easy but far more depressing question is, what rookie, not that you think is going to be best, but what rookie are you most excited to see?
I think, like, the only one who's going to play is Anderson, realistically. Like, I'm a huge Jarrell Martin guy. I think he could be a big piece for them in 2-3 years, but he won't play this season. And it's hard to see. I like Sam Decker a lot, too.
Yeah.
So, even Sam Decker's a good player, too, but he's not going to play this year either. So pretty much just Anderson is the only guy with the opportunity right now to get many minutes, I think.
So, Jonathan, you like, because I know that you like Mickey. So you like both of them as NBA players?
Oh, yeah. I thought LSU is one of the, like, those two guys could play anywhere in the country. They were a very poorly capitalized team, the rest of that roster. But those two guys, I think, are both favorite NBA players.
Does Capella count as a rookie, or since he got the cup of coffee last year, is he not?
For selfish reasons, I want to count him because he would be my answer.
Yeah. It depends on what Houston does. I haven't heard anything recently, so correct me if I'm wrong, but they still aren't sure what's going on with Harrell.
I think Harrell's going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Especially with Chuck Hayes not working out. I think that opens up the spot for Harrell.
Yeah.
He'll be in Rio Grande most of the year, obviously.
Yeah, he'll be in Rio. I'm interested to see if he works, though. And why I might be most excited, even though he's not going to play many minutes, for Decker is just because I am honestly not sure what his NBA position and role is. And Houston is a team that I think would be comfortable trying him out in different sets. Like, he would be fun as a stretch four. I don't think that, I mean, the Rockets have a million different guys who can play the power forward position for them. But if Decker gets some of that and it works, I'd be really excited to see it. The only other thing that I want to kind of have in the offseason review that we just haven't talked about is Patrick Beverley. And Patrick Beverley, for whatever reason, despite guys like Reggie Jackson signing really lucrative contracts, he signed a lower value contract. And you're kind of thinking at the time, oh, well, you know, he's starting for a great team. You know, the Houston made the conference finals largely without him because he got hurt. And then they bring in a guy to replace him, too. I just feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's Houston, though. Houston's going to, they're going to play the value. It is what it is with them. And he got paid,
kind of
got
to wonder about his representation.
Yeah, you do. And also, the fact that his last year is non-guaranteed is mind-blowing. He's going to be making, like, $5 million non-guaranteed, which is sort of not that ridiculous value because it's not, you know, you're not in a Brendan Haywood situation where, you know, he's not going to make that money because you're going to keep him on the contract. But it just makes it so much more ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a good use, I guess, because he was undrafted, right? So they got him as an undrafted free agent, and he was an RFA. That was one of those Daryl Morey contracts they paying off for them.
Yeah, he was a guy who I kind of, you know, we were kind of hoping to see Portland just, like, screw with everybody and throw, you gonna match this kind of contracts at everybody, and he was kind of one of the guys you sort of had hoped for.
Or the Sixers.
I think you and Nate have talked about this before, kind of the, that's a gamble from both ends. What if they don't match? What if I'm in Philly? Oh, no.
it is a question mark with the Sixers. Yeah, they're a team that, I can't remember who I was talking about it with on the podcast, that if for those 3 days, if you were somebody who had just been on a good team, that you'd just be sweating bullets that, like, what if my team doesn't match and I'm in Philly for a year? Oh, God. I think it was Ben Golliver. It's like, that would be terrifying if being on a winning team was important to you.
Yeah, but if you're getting, like, Enes Kanter money, you know, you'll be okay.
God. It's going to take me a long time to get over that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's the five levels of that contract, right? That, like, but he's double-double, but he can't play defense, but what else were they going to spend the money on?
But he can't play defense.
But how do you tell Kevin Durant you let him walk away? And I think that was kind of the tiebreaker, that almost, is that, you know, for almost internal politics. If you already have a reputation for being sort of on the cheap side, how do you go to your best player and say, all right, Kevin, we're not matching this contract, but it's not because we're cheap. It's because your teammate is really bad at basketball.
And we gave up a first round pick for him.
Yeah. And that's how do you even have that conversation? So I think that I don't think you'll ever get anyone to come around to that on the record or anything like that, but that had to have played a part in the, like, we have to do this because we have to do this kind of thing.
To you, does that same logic apply to Dion Waiters, or is that give them another year to tell Kevin Durant, are you really okay with us letting him go?
I'm not on Dion Waiters' island, so...
I guess let's just let Katie play with Dion Waiters for a while, and then he'll have his own opinion, I'm sure.
And then they can
play it all together.
Then they'll endear themselves to Kevin Durant by trading Dion Waiters at the deadline. You're like, see? You don't have to deal with him anymore. But we'll move on. The season preview part, I like to start it with something basic. We'll start with Jonathan of how you would rank the teams 1 to 5. Most people have done it in terms of regular season success, but if you want to use another metric, you can.
I'll just go with regular season. I'll throw a few curveballs, I guess, a little different. I'll say Houston 1, San Antonio 2, New Orleans 3, Memphis 4, Dallas 5.
Well, that's interesting. You would probably think that the Spurs not being 1 would be the one that I'm more intrigued by, but for me it's New Orleans over Memphis.
Well, I was just thinking with Memphis, they're older, they got a lot of guys with injuries, I'm thinking. And New Orleans, maybe they should injuries work out for them. Because with most of these regular season predictions, it's all about injuries more often than not. Like, who's going to stay healthy all year long? Who's going to – if you look at, like, give me list injuries for the course of the season, I can look at it pretty easily. If you look back on it. So then I'm thinking with Memphis, like we talked about earlier in the podcast, like with Zebo and Allen getting a little older, maybe they'll decline a little bit more. Then New Orleans, I'm thinking Anthony Davis, he'll just know even more this year, maybe the MVP of the league. Give him in that middle of the Western Conference area, possibly. I don't know.
I guess I want to ask you if you're putting the Rockets over the Spurs, if you would carry that into the playoffs. If you think, which team is more likely to win a title? Do you think Houston's more likely to win a title than San Antonio, or you think that Houston, for various reasons, is and I don't necessarily disagree with this, by the way, is better situated to win a lot of regular season games than San Antonio is.
With the second part with Houston, I feel like they have more continuity right now, and with all the depth they have and the youth they have in their roster, I think for regular season, they'll be winning a lot of games. They'll be able to run things off the floor a lot of times, and I think that'll push them on the top a little bit in the West. I think it's really a top four in the West. I'm really high on Houston. I think they're right there with Golden State, Oklahoma City, and San Antonio. I mean, gun to my head over the Spurs, I don't know, but I feel like they're right there. Like, there's a very, very tiny difference between them and those other three teams. Why not? I'll say yes.
I noticed you didn't have the Clippers there.
I'm not sure if they have enough wings, though. I feel like without... Like, wings who play defense and shoot threes. I mean, if Paul Pierce was starting three, he's, 38?
Yeah.
I mean, Redick's decent. Lance, it's not shooting. I like Lance, but he's a wild card, obviously.
Yeah.
Jamal's not playing any defense either.
Team that could have some crazy age-related regression, like they had a lot of guys, other than Lance, who had good seasons last year that could... If they lose a step physically, like not only Paul Pierce, but I think there's a possibility with Chris Paul. Like, I still think the Clippers are in that group because I'm not going to write off any of those guys until they do it. But I could totally see the Clippers being a little bit disappointing this year.
Because when I look at it, like if they had to play the Thunder in a series, if they put Pierce on Durant, like, I mean, Matt Barnes was big for them with that. He was their 1-3-and-D guy. And Pierce is more of a 4 these days, really. He can't do that anymore, guard Kevin Durant for any amount of time.
The biggest worry would be, I almost think the best matchup, but almost don't want to do this because of foul problems, would be to put Griffin on him. But,
considering how Blake plays when he's in foul trouble, that's always been a concern with him. That would certainly be worthwhile watching.
I would love to watch that. Yeah, no doubt. That'd be really fun to watch.
So how would you put these guys 1-5, Seth?
You know, I think that Houston, San Antonio, I feel like regular season wins, who cares between the two of them? I lean towards what Jonathan was saying about Houston being slightly better equipped to, you know, kind of have a gaudy regular season record, and especially if Pop is gonna pop some this year with some of the older guys. Maybe that cost them a win or two. I still think Memphis is going to be better than New Orleans. I think that New Orleans, all right, it's all about injuries. New Orleans has a lot of guys who get injured. Everyone in their top six, seven, has a history of getting nicked up. So, and they also are a team that if you know, either Holiday or Davis misses time, that's kind of a huge hit for them. Whereas Memphis has kind of shown they can weather injuries to basically anybody but Gasol. So that's, I think that Memphis is still better. I think Memphis is probably, if we're doing the conference, I think we agree on who the top five teams are in some order. Memphis 6, and then New Orleans probably the next step down, and then 8, who knows?
Yeah, and while I see a path that New Orleans is better than Memphis, I just don't think it's more likely than not. And
right.
it's close.
Exactly.
I mean, we're splitting hairs to a point with teams like that. I like both of them quite a bit. But I think Seth brings up a great point with injuries with them. I mean, it always concerns me a little bit when you have young guys that get hurt all the time. Because, you know, that generally... And Ryan Anderson hasn't shown that he can that he's even close to all the way back from all of his stuff. So... He would be, if you could give, say, plop in 100% Ryan Anderson on this team, I think that would be a really nice thing for him to have, but I can't feel comfortable saying that's going to happen at all.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, what, they had to pay, the Sixers paid the Pelicans $3 million for Holiday's injuries?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a great sign right there.
That's one of those things that I'm wondering how that's going to turn out, just because, I mean, granted, that was a terrible trade for New Orleans in the first place, but... They, if there was something like structural that has kind of helped, you know, made some of this more egregious, that totally changes the arc of this Pelicans team, especially considering they've never had a backup that could stretch into a starter role. Like Norris Cole, I'm not high on Norris Cole anyway, but you can't run whatever we want to talk about as a viewable Alvin Gentry offense. I don't think Norris Cole can run that.
I
feel like though with New Orleans, everyone always brings up the Holiday for Nerlens Noel trade. But really, to me, it's the Austin Rivers pick. If they had picked, like, Terrence Jones in that pick, man, it'd be a nice team right now, right? Like, oof, that was one thing that was going to kill them down the road.
Yeah, that was definitely not a strange. I mean, so one crazy stat that I threw out there once with them is, depending on how their non-roster invitees work out, it is entirely possible that they will roll out an entire team where everybody has agreed to their second contract, which means they'll have Davis, who will still be on a rookie deal. But other than that, they'll have nobody at the beginning of their NBA career. And that's crazy for a team that is still considered young. They're just in this bizarre hodgepodge of talent.
You know what? It's sad to say, and they're making a lot of the same mistakes Cleveland did the first time around with LeBron. One point on New Orleans is that I think that, you know, I'm kind of, I don't think he's a great player, but I think that because of kind of some of his aesthetics aren't great, that I think Tyreke Edevens is a better player than is he's commonly given credit for. So, you know, if Holiday misses some times, they can, it won't always be pretty, but spread pick and roll with Evans and Davis is a good offense. Like, you put two shooters around that, that's, you'll get buckets with that offense. And it's not always going to be pretty, because a lot of the plays you're making are going to be Evans throwing up a shot at the rim that someone tip dunks. But it's still, I mean, he can get to the rim going right, because he's always going right, but he still gets there every time anyway. So, you know, that he's not a nobody if he ends up having to do point guard things. And maybe Gentry will realize that, all right, he's basically playing point guard for us, so we don't need Norris Cole on the floor.
I mean, I would take Evans and Holiday to be one of those LeBron Cavs teams from, like, the first era of those teams. Like, those are two really good NBA players. So, I mean, I feel like, I can see where you're coming from. That is a little unfair, a little bit, to say that with the LeBron thing.
Well, with those LeBron teams, they were really good defensively. They were talented teams. What's hard with them is that the year they made the finals was not one of their best teams. Their best teams were the ones that lost to Orlando and lost to the Celtics, and you know, guys like Varejao and all that. But yeah, I think there's something to be said about that. Also, with the idea of that they were doing it with the best intentions. You know, this isn't a situation where they were being cheap or they were doing anything else. They were just being a little bit misguided and they were going aggressively. They went, you know, we want that guy. We're going to give up something to make it happen. You know, like how they traded Grievous Vasquez to get Tyreke Evans on a deal that Sacramento was never going to match. And, you know, while Grievous Vasquez is not the cure-all of anything, though the Raptors did just get a first-round pick for him for some reason, that's the type of thing you can't give away a guy when your team is going to have major depth issues. And so that's something I think about with them. And that's something similar to what the Cavs had to do, where they were committed and they wanted somebody, so they gave up things to do it. And some of them were a little bit older, some of them were imperfect fits, but they thought, you know, we need to get better right now. And then they just weren't good enough.
And then you get in a situation where you actually are one piece away and you have nothing left to throw at that piece.
Yeah.
Well, I guess though, with the cap going up, like this, a team is going to have Terrence Jones really hard too. They'll have to do something like that, won't they? This offseason,
they could. Yeah, I got frustrated that they're spending. So not for this year. That, you know, they can spend money for this year. They weren't going to have cap flexibility, but next year, Ashik Cunningham and Ajinsa and G, I think they combined to make about $20 million next year, and that, like, if basically to me, while you have no guarantees. I think that if you're a young, talented player, and you say, hey, you can go play with Anthony Davis and live in New Orleans for a couple of years, I think that's a pretty good sales pitch. Good.
Yeah, I mean, that could work from this offseason, though. That's really, this cap could save their bacon, this salary cap going up. They should be real players for Anthony this offseason.
It could, but the way that they get cap space is by basically giving up Gordon and Anderson, which is justifiable, especially if they can, you know, get somebody good with that, but you're replacing capable rotation players. The other hope for them, which is a real possibility, is that if they got somebody who was really good, who was interested in going there, that they could move some of their existing contracts to clear a little bit of space. Because, well, I don't love the money that they gave to Ajinsa. Right. Well, Ajinsa isn't all right, but, you know, like the money that they gave to Omer. If they pop a power forward or a center that's really good, I think that there will be somebody that would take him, either with a small asset or even maybe give up something, because so many teams are going to have kind of hilarious money to spend.
Well, I actually disagree with you here. You know, the Ashik contract looks weird, although the reported numbers aren't as bad, since it's, you know, the partial guarantee on the last 2 years makes it a much more manageable actual guaranteed number. I feel like, you know, locking up a guy who, if everything goes right, is your 10-minute game backup center. For multiple years guaranteed. I don't get that. Especially when your best player, you think you want to try to transition to the five more, because that's the way the league is going. I at least understood the Ashik contract. I didn't like who was offering years to Ajinsa. That was on a piece with the Aaron Baines, and I think Baines is a better player contract. For me, as far as kind of a head scratcher,
and the point that gets to is that they, while it wasn't definite, they could have had the potential to use their money next summer in a more positive way. And if they had signed Ajinsa to a 1 year deal, what's the worst that happens? You lose him, and he goes somewhere else next summer, and you probably can get somebody better than him. So
you have to sign. You have to search for a serviceable backup center next summer. Like, yeah, that's not a very bad worst case scenario, right?
Especially when you get to play with Anthony Davis and all that,
right? Who should?
Yeah, I would have liked Kyle LeQuinn on this team.
That would have been better.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, there we go.
Yeah, and they got him for nothing. You know, to a very similar contract, they gave up like some sort of distant second round pick. The next question I'll go start with Seth is: how many teams in this division make the playoffs?
4.5.
You think Dallas has you're higher on Dallas than I am.
I just that eighth spot in the West is, you know, and things could fall apart for New Orleans too. But But that eighth spot in the West is, you know, who knows? It's you know, I think we can rule out the Lakers, Kings, Blazers, Wolves, probably Nuggets. Those five teams.
I want to see the Kings, like, probably so, but I want to believe in the Kings a little bit. I want to give them hope right now.
Their ceiling is making the playoffs, but I wouldn't expect it.
I mean, yeah, I think Denver's better than the Kings. Let me put it that way.
I hope so. Denver has a lot of talent. I like them a lot.
I mean, that could just be my smittenness with Moutier that causes me to say that.
Well, but their roster also makes sense with each other, which the Kings roster does not.
Yes. In any event, so that means it's you know, you're talking Phoenix, Dallas, Utah. Who else am I forgetting for that eighth spot? You pick among those teams who it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and if somebody, let's say Memphis or whoever, falls off due to injury, then, you know, Dallas is in that mix too. That's why I think it's four, is because I think that if for whatever reason an additional spot opens up, it's probably going to be at the expense of one of these other teams. Well, granted, I think the Rockets and Spurs are making the playoffs basically no matter what, unless everything falls apart. But, you know, maybe Memphis or New Orleans, they have a bad stretch, and Dallas is one of the teams they can get up. What about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, I think four is probably fair. I think the Mavs are waiting for, like, an OKC type season for somebody else. I appreciate the Mavs' optimism, but I really feel like it's JaVale McGee is the most important player on this team right now, because he's the only guy who can really replace Tyson Chandler. I'm still upset about that. Like, they let him go twice, and each time it just crushed me inside a little bit. But, yeah.
I'm not saying that Dallas has a chance to make the playoffs because I'm especially high on the Mavericks. It's more just that like...
You hate the Jazz, right? You want to admit that to
all the people in Utah? I don't hate the Jazz. I just, you know, are they ready? Are they going to score enough to win enough games in the West to...
Without a point guard.
Is the lineup playing, you know, Hayward, Hood, and Burks on the perimeter? Is that going to have enough ball handling and creation to you know, get them by? Or are they going to have to play, you know, Trey Burke or you know, hope that Neto is Neto? Neto? How am I
Neto.
Saying that?
It's Neto. Neto?
Okay.
How much do we have to pay to have a time where the Spurs play the Jazz and they both run lineups without traditional point guards for a little bit? That would just be fun.
That would be fun. Yeah, that would be real fun.
Even though that kind of negates the value of each team doing it.
But and then Phoenix, like, what's going on there? Like, you know, guy who might be their best player might not be on their team by the start of the season. And I don't think Markieff Morris is their best player. I think it's probably Bledsoe. But still, like, one of their key pieces is saying he's going to be traded, and after you know the kind of the magical season 2 years ago, it has not been sweetness and light there. So, you know, where do they end up? Or do you want to count on them? The door is open for Dallas just through corporate knowledge and, you know, Carlisle and Nowitzki's knowing how to just, you know, massage their way through a season to 46 wins and the eighth seed.
Everybody's just keeping the door open for the Lakers. You know it's true.
Oh, come on.
The thing with the Mavs too, though, is it's injuries. Like Deron Williams, if he can stay healthy, Matthews obviously, Parsons coming off knee surgery, Dirk's 38. They've got a great training staff, but that's going to be, I think, the number one concern. Is just can these guys stay healthy?
And almost none of them have logical replacements on the roster. It's not like, you know, if Dirk is irreplaceable just because he's Dirk, but Chandler Parsons goes out. Not only do you probably have Anderson going into the starting lineup. Who gets his minutes? You know, who steps into that second place role? You know, they have a lot of, you know, I have faith in Carlisle, but I don't know how they react to basically any trauma.
They might need to make some signing or something. Yeah, I'm looking at.
Even though they already
right,
have like 35 guys on roster.
Well, a lot of them on those D League contracts, like five guys on those, so that won't be a too big a deal.
Oh yeah, but that's the one of my big beefs, and I read about this for Sport News. Is like, if you're under the cap, you should which I don't think technically the Mavs are anymore. You should be able to have as many guys on roster as you want, because why not?
Well, they can. They can invite 20 to
I think
camp.
They invited 20. I think they got a full 20 man thing going.
Yeah, but I think that during the season, if you want to, you know, if you're the Sixers and you're just going to, you know, be dancing at the floor, you should be able to have, you should only be able to have 13 or 14 active, you know, whatever the active number is for that given season. But if you want to have 25 guys on roster, why should anybody stop them?
Do you realize how many EuroLeague players Sam Hinkie just signed to 2+1+1 contracts?
Yes, and that's why I won it.
Oh.
Hey, Danny's creating jobs as we speak.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're bad jobs because I have to work three of them. Sorry, it's a politics Twitter.
I mean, they're pretty lucrative jobs compared. But
comparatively, but on NBA standard, they're bad jobs.
And they're in rough working conditions considering it's the
exactly surgeries. Hazard pay, and you know it's you know, no job security and you know it's the Uber driver of the NBA is.
But,
you know what it is? It's probably owners don't want to do it. I'm sure there's owners like, you know what, I want to sign 15 contracts, no more. That's probably really what it comes down to.
Yeah, like, I think that's what it is. And it would create, I think it would be relatively easy to administer because basically you just say if a team goes over the cap, they just have to get down to 15. But yeah, it's doing that. But the last question, obviously we can talk about other things, though. Players that at any level, you know, could be lower level or high, that players that you think will break into a different level of either quality of play or fame, whatever you find more interesting.
In this division?
Yes.
Okay.
If you want to go outside the division, I'm not going to stop.
No, it's just the division's fine. I'm going to set up my boy Dwight Powell on the Mavs. Sure. I feel like that's my sleeper guy. I love his game. I feel like he'll play a lot of minutes this year. He might not right away. He's got a nice, well-rounded game. He could shoot, pretty athletic, can't play much defense, but that's okay. I think if Dirk ever goes down for a while, Dwight's going to play a lot of minutes. And he'll do better people might think they would, considering his pedigree coming out of the league. But I really liked him a lot in Dallas this last year, and I feel like he's a chance to be a pretty good player in the NBA. Then I guess let's see Kyle Anderson. Let's see slow-mo go this year. That's the other obvious one. You feel it? I don't know how much he'll play with West and DL at the 4 and the 5, whether he'll just be a 3 for them or be a 4. But that's a guy I think who could have a pretty big season for San Antonio if the right things go their way. I think with Houston, Jones and Mata Yunus, how that goes, that'll be really interesting to watch those two guys kind of fight for a contract, fight for minutes, and which one of them emerges as kind of the main guy there. It'll be fun to watch.
I mean, are we asking about insider or outsider kind of level of fame?
Whatever makes you happy, Seth.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm obviously charter member of I'm not at all the charter member, but I'm a member of good standing of the, you know, Mike Conley is massively underrated and is going to be probably remembered as the best player of this generation to never make an All-Star team.
He better make it this year. I'm going to be so mad.
The way he ripped up Lillard the playoffs, that's got to do him some credit, man. Really, before he got injured, he was just demolishing Dame.
But look at the people he's got to beat. I mean, he's got to beat out the Kobe Bryant voters and...
He has to hope that Kobe Bryant's hurt.
Yeah, and Lillard and Paul and Curry and Harden and you were at
I think Dame will be out this year because of Portland's record. They'll be out of the next
time. He's going to average like 28 points a game. So, but you might be right. But even if Lillard's
out of it, I mean, there's just a crazy amount of talent, and it's, you know, you think about somebody like Westbrook. Like Westbrook, you know, if he's healthy, he has
to be.
The number of non-negotiables is also part of the reason why they shouldn't have the conference format in the All-Star game. But the number of non-negotiable guards in the West is ridiculous, and Kobe's going to get a spot anyway. So,
well, how many? Wait, it's Russ, Chris Paul, and Steph, right? Are the non-negotiable. And Harden, of course, yeah. So that's four. That leaves two slots left for the two other guards.
And Kobe, we have to assume he gets one.
Yeah, his last year kind of went golden. So then he's competing. Who's competing with that sixth spot? I guess it would be...
Lillard, Klay Thompson.
Oh, Klay Thompson. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, and you know, obviously Wiggins is a forward and it's too early, but maybe, you know, if he's taking a wing spot from somebody, then
think they'll put him as a forward, I hope. Yeah.
But still we're talking about like the roster spots where position doesn't necessarily matter as much, because it's not like we have to pick like, you know, five guards and
that's true, because these guys aren't starters.
Yeah. But, and the other, I mean, another guy who he's going to be battling for a, probably a reserve spot for, who I don't think that people recognize how great a player he is Kawhi. Even though he's like one finals MVP, was of the deserving defensive player of the year winner last year, and also a really good offensive player. And arguably, I'm not big on the top X player thing, but still, like a top 10-ish player in the league possibly this year. And whether or not he gets recognized as such, he might start to be. I can only hope, just because he's ridiculously good. And I think this might be the year, if he doesn't get hurt for a couple months like he did last year, this will be the year when people start to really realize that, like, all right, you've got Tim Duncan, who's kind of aged out, and LaMarcus Aldridge, who's really good, but the best player on the Spurs is this guy.
Yeah. I think
he would have made it last year if he got injured, probably. Yeah. You would assume.
The other two guys that I want to add, they're a lower tier than those, are Quincy Pondexter and Patty Mills. I think both of them will be asked to do more and will do well in it. And because those teams will both be playoff teams, I think people will gain a greater appreciation for their talent.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it's pretty funny now Memphis losing Pondexter, because he's pretty much the player they need, looking back on it.
Yeah, and
like,
they gave him away.
That was a low-key, really bad trade for them. Yeah. It really was just Boston giving away booby prizes last year with Rondo and Jeff Green. Just luring people in, man. That was real sneaky of them.
Yeah, they mysteriously, after they traded their most famous players, they got a lot better. Well, it's strange how that happens sometimes. And I feel like this is a really strange thing to say, considering he's playing in a small market again, but I feel like there are going to be people who have already forgotten that David West is good, and I think he'll be worse this year than he's been in the past, but that Pacers team was just so weird last year that I think people have forgotten that, you know, like, he and Hibbert were quite good when they were, you know, when they had their full complement. I mean, 2 years ago, this was a Pacers team that was dangerous.
Well, the thing with West is, like, does Kawhi play any four this year? And if he does, there's not a ton of minutes left once you have Duncan, Dio, and Aldridge, then Kawhi at the four.
That does when you play all your guys 20 minutes a game.
I suppose that's true. And I know Duncan will play, what, 55 games this year?
Yeah, so, and 60 games,
yeah. Out. Yeah.
All those minutes go to Jonathan Simmons, man. I like him a lot, actually. But, yeah, and they have a lot of guys, the Spurs, guys like Marjanovic and Bonner, who I don't think they're going to be playing a big role, so I think that when you tone the starters down, there are only a few guys that are kind of going to sponge up those minutes, and West is one, Kyle Anderson is one, whoever the third point guard, presumably McCallum, maybe Jimmer, oh God, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Would
be one of those guys. Oh, I kind of, for a second there, I thought about saying Jimmer is my breakout candidate, and just having the whole state of Utah love me for not only defending their honor against Seth, but for picking Jimmer.
What did I do?
You're not sold on a team that has some big question marks.
Yeah, Jimmer is, if someone's listened this far, I'll give them the hot basketball take. Jimmer is the basketball Tebow.
Basketball Tebow, that's not too bad. He didn't make the roster. I'm looking at, they have, what, 16 guys are now under contract?
I don't know. The guy that they just signed, I believe he was a Japanese player. I don't know what his contract circumstance is, but I think they have 14 guaranteed, and then they have Reggie and Jimmer as non-guaranteed.
Yeah, Reggie Williams.
Reggie Williams, who somehow, as a CBA nerd, I have to mention this because I somehow have not mentioned this on any podcast. They have him on a non-guaranteed contract. And everybody talks about how they cleared all this space, you know, to go after LaMarcus Aldridge. Somehow, he didn't get cut. Like, they had to clear the decks. They couldn't even sign their own first-round pick. But somehow, Reggie Williams stays on this team. And I think they're going to cut him before the season. It's crazy. He's like the off-season Highlander with this team.
Well, but would cutting him really save them that much over what the roster hold would be, or
like $600,000?
Okay.
That's, you know, but apparently I think they were probably ready to cut him, but then when the cap came in higher, they went, "Oh, sorry, right. We don't have to."
Right.
But
they've still got a couple of guys stashed overseas, so that's
of course they do.
Yeah, because Spurs.
Yeah. I'm not really that in love with the guys that they have overseas, but of course, in like 2-3 years, they'll be really good because that's just, you know, what happens.
John Charles looked intriguing. He looked kind of in the best way. He looked kind of Al-Farouq Aminu-ish at Summer League, kind of the Dallas version of Aminu. By the way,
are you going to miss him, Jonathan?
Aminu, yeah. I was hoping they would just sign him and Tyson. I was like, let's just sign these guys, bring him back this year. He'd been huge for the Mavs this season.
Would have been better than what they got.
Yep. It was a bird in hand versus two in the bush, man. Yeah. The Mavs never learn.
Is there anything else you guys like to talk about?
No, I don't know. Just have either of you guys watched a lot of Serbia in the EuroLeague? Can you tell me anything about Bjelica?
He's awesome. He is awesome. So when I've been watching him, he looks to me like more of a 3 than a 4. Which surprised me a little bit. I like him. When I watched him in Europe, I liked him more as a small ball 4, but with his handle and everything, I think that he's, for the NBA game, at least right now.
He's 6'10", right?
Yeah, I think he's like 6'8". Okay. I could be wrong, though. But I think that but also just in terms of rebounding and everything else, but he's a really talented player, and his handle for a guy his size, whatever his size happens to be, is very good, and his sense of, you know, like where defenders are in the court, he's going to be a really good player. Like, he, to me, people talk about, you know, the Wolves have so much talent. I think he's one of the better players on their team right now.
He's listed at 6'10", 235.
Holy crap.
So if he's more of a 3 than a 4, that's really saying something.
If he's 6'10", then he could be a real stretch for you. Maybe it's just because that Serbian team has so many randomly tall guys that I just think of him as shorter.
Yeah, draft system at 6'10", too. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really watched him play that much, but that's saying if he's 6'10", he can play like a 3. He'll be big for them.
And considering they already have a stretch 5 on their roster, I mean, the Wolves are still going to be bad next year, but they'll be good in a couple of years.
They're the number one league pass team, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but as long as Flip doesn't overly flip this team.
Well, especially if you consider the number of games and they have the best local crew, or one of the two or three best local broadcast crews.
Oh, that's true too.
That they're. I mean, if you're
shout out to Dave Benz.
What's that?
Shout out to Dave Benz.
Yeah, who I played some blackjack with the last night at Summer League. A nice guy. He said he'd been working out with Shabazz's trainer, and he looked it. I didn't even recognize him because he was just jacked.
So Bjelica is pretty close in height to Kuzmic. That's terrifying.
Kuzmic is what, 7 foot, 7 foot
yeah,
one?
Yeah. So I'm looking at the EuroLeague rosters. Bjelica is 2.09 meters, and Kuzmic is 2.13. So that's pretty close.
How did they get him? He was a pick of the Wizards, right?
I think they drafted him, actually.
No, the Wizards drafted him.
Oh, God.
What was the trade for him?
Was it cash considerations along for just like with Jordan Clarkson?
Oh, geez, really?
I don't know. I'm asking. I'm making a Jordan Clarkson joke. I don't know.
Oh, so apparently people were trying to trade for Bjelica before the Wolves signed him this summer. I didn't know about that. That's interesting.
Because, like, man, he'd be perfect for the Wizards. That's really too bad they drafted him.
Well, he was drafted
in 2010.
That's
exactly the player they need.
Okay. Oh, so he was traded in Minnesota on draft. Okay. He was always Timberwolf because he was. Wow, this trade is going to bring back some names. So this is the trade. The Washington acquired the rights to 23rd pick Trevor Booker and 56th pick Hamadi Njai. For 30th pick, Lazar Hayward and Bjelica.
Wow.
Oh, man. There's some names for you right there. Wow. Yeah.
I'll give you the next trade, because the trade that happened with the pick immediately after that is also a really fun blast from the past, name one. So, New Jersey acquired Damian James from the Hawks for Jordan Crawford and the newly relevant Tibor Pleiss.
Man, Tibor's all over the place. Jeez.
Tibor, yeah, he got traded a couple of times. I think his rights got the Hawks sold his rights to the Thunder, who then traded him to the Jazz. And now he's on the Jazz.
There you go.
Yeah. The more you know.
All right.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking time. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Seth and Jonathan for taking the time to come on. You can read Seth Partnow at Nylon Calculus and numerous other excellent basketball sites. You can follow him on Twitter at SethPartnow. And you can read Jonathan Charks at Real GM The Cauldron and Pattern of Basketball, which I believe is his blog. You can also follow him on Twitter at Jonathan Charks, JonathanTjarks. Thank you so much for listening. This is the 5th of 6. The Pacific one will come up in the next couple weeks. I'm thinking right now I'm going to have some non-division guests and go a little bit more in that direction. I love doing that, and then do the Pacific a little bit closer to the start of the season. And there, I don't know exactly who's going to be on that one, but it'll be fun. For other kind of plugs, of course, writing new material for the Sporting News all the time. The CBA Encyclopedia for Real GM is going strong. And the Dunked On Basketball Podcast, Nate and I just released our Western Conference offseason grades, having done the Eastern Conference a week ago. If you like this podcast or that one, we encourage you to subscribe. And also, if you leave a review on iTunes, hopefully a positive one, that definitely helps us. And as we are in the process of doing advertising for both podcasts, it helps us because it gives them something to tie to and a reason to expect that people will keep coming back. So if you have any feedback, you can reach out to me. The best way is probably on Twitter, at Danny LaRoux, DannyLeroux. You can also email daniel.laroux@realgm.com. Or you can check out my Facebook page, which is Danny LaRoux NBA. It's also linked to my Twitter handle. You can send comments anywhere. I read them. I respond to as many as I can, but I definitely read them all. I promise you that. So thank you so much for taking the time. Take care and make it a great day.